man tears filling up Poplar Creek. You gotta love the Dan. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studios on a Tuesday. It's Tuesday, right? Tuesday morning. We're going to be, you know, we always play back some classic Johnny Carson. You can watch the Johnny Carson show every night on Antenna TV. What is this we're running? Johnny steals Letterman's truck? What?
That's exactly what it sounds like.
Okay. I'm ready for it. We do a thing called It Came From Amazon, where we look at some actual products that you can buy on Amazon and read the actual reviews. Many of them are hilarious. We're going to talk about weird phobias, most common phobias, and we're going to talk about some product slogans, because finger licking good is going away. So, 312-981-7200. All right. Ken Gerhard is an author and a cryptozoologist, and he travels the world looking for evidence of mysterious creatures, including the Loch Ness Monster, the Chupacabra, the Mothman, werewolves, all that kind of cool stuff. He's appeared on numerous TV shows, and he's got a new book, which is The Essential Guide to Bigfoot. And let's welcome Ken to the show. Hello, Ken.
Good evening, Nick. It's an honor and a pleasure to speak with you this evening.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much. When did you start to get into the cryptozoology world and looking for these mysterious creatures? When did that start for you, Ken?
Well, it's been a lifelong passion of mine ever since I was a young boy and I first heard about Bigfoot and cryptozoology. What I tell people is that I was already infatuated with both monster movies and also animals in the outdoors. So cryptozoology seemed like it combined the best of both of those worlds.
Yeah.
So, I never planned on making it a career, but I've just been very blessed. And, years ago, I began doing field research with other guys, that like-minded individuals that went out looking for Bigfoot and started writing books, and was very fortunate, got discovered by a producer for the Travel Channel years ago, and so it's been a fun ride.
That's
really
great.
I really love what I do.
That's really great, Ken. So you loved monster movies. You were a big monster movie fan when you were a kid. Tell me a little bit about that, because me too, Ken. I to this day, horror is still my favorite genre, and I was obsessed with it since I can remember.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I loved Godzilla movies. When I was a kid, I'd wake up in the middle of the night, back in the TV Guide days. You'd check and see there's a Godzilla movie on at 3 in the morning, wake up for that, and then go back to bed. Gargoyles is one of my favorites. It's an old 70s
movie. Yeah, Bernie Casey. Yeah.
Cornell Wilde, that's a good one.
And so, I enjoyed Jennifer Salt in that movie, too, I got to say.
Oh, yeah, Jennifer. But, monsters, animal. My father was a forestry professor, so I spent a lot of time in the outdoors. I had a lot of exotic pets when I was a kid, like an alligator and stuff. So
you had an alligator?
A caiman. It was a small alligator. Eventually got so big we had to give it away to the zoo, but it was fun while it lasted.
So let me ask you about a little bit more about the alligator. What do you feed an alligator? And how often do you feed an alligator? And just what's the upkeep? How do you take care of an alligator?
Well, they're ectothermic. They're cold-blooded animals, so their metabolism is pretty low, so they're not very active. They just kind of hang out in the tank. They're aquatic. We had a large aquarium, and we fed it feeder fish, mostly, just little minnows and things. But, they're opportunistic feeders, so they'd probably eat anything you put in there. Reptiles are pretty low maintenance. Usually they're not real active. They don't eat very often, So,
and you said you had, besides the alligator, did you have other exotic animals, pets?
A variety of different types of reptiles. I used to go out in the woods and collect different snakes and salamanders and, anything kind of creepy crawly was kind of my thing. I liked all those little creepy crawly types of things.
Yeah. So everybody else in your household enjoy the creepy crawly stuff, or was it just you?
That's a great question. I don't really remember anyone else putting a lot of time and effort into it other than myself. You know, I think I was, I think my father helped me with the alligator quite a bit, but other than that, I was kind of on my own.
Yeah. Okay. So when did you discover, can you remember discovering, let's go with Nessie. When did you, do you remember first discovering the Loch Ness Monster and the legend?
Well, you know, I grew up in the 70s, and we had this great television show called In Search Of, hosted by Leonard Nimoy.
I think you and I are probably around the same age, because all these references I remember specifically.
Probably so, but this is the cool thing, Nick. As I was growing up, my mother was a travel agent, and she was very adventurous, so she took me on vacations all around the world. We camped along the Amazon River when I was a kid. We hiked the Australian outback, all of these fabulous places. And when I was 15 years old, my family went to Loch Ness. And so when I was 15 years old, I attempted my first field research, and that consisted of I had a little 8mm movie camera that I carried with me, and I'd hike around the lake and kind of just gaze out at the water. And I interviewed a lot of the local people, you know, if they had had sightings, and just to kind of gauge their opinion about what was in the lake. So that was kind of, maybe that was kind of the, looking back on my life, I realized that was kind of a seminal event in my life that kind of launched me on this path.
15 years old, interviewing people and investigating the Loch Ness Monster. Now, my producer is part Scottish and has spent time in Scotland, and you have gone to the Loch Ness.
I have.
And have you been there, Ken?
It's been years, but yeah, I was there when I was younger.
Yeah, but they really embrace it, though.
Oh yeah, I think Ken can definitely speak to it. I don't know how it was back in the day, but it's just, you know, now they're selling plushes and
t-shirts
books
and books and stuff. Yeah,
I think it's great.
Yeah, that's a fun. I mean, I've always been a fan of that legend. You know, Ken, it's always been one of my favorites.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's one of the iconic mysteries. I mean, just the imagery of this kind of, we envision this kind of dragon-like creature living in this mist-shrouded lake, and you've got the old castle ruins there, Urquhart Castle. And, you know, but you know, the thing is, when you speak to the locals, and there's no doubt they've capitalized on their monster legend, you know.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, booming tourist industry, but the locals there, I mean, they most of them acknowledge there is something extraordinary in the lake. Some of them have seen it. Pretty much everyone knows somebody who's seen it or seen something.
Yeah.
So that, you know, they embrace it as a real thing. And I mean, it's a mystery. It's a great mystery to them, but it's also part of their everyday lives.
Yeah,
you know?
True. Okay, Ken, hold on. Ken Gerhard is with us. His latest book is called The Essential Guide to Bigfoot. He studies things like the Loch Ness Monster, the Chupacabra, the Mothman, werewolves, and we'll talk more about Bigfoot. He's been on a bunch of TV shows, and he's written some books, too. His latest is The Essential Guide to Bigfoot. If you want to jump in here, we've got comments, questions about these mysterious creatures or the legends of like Bigfoot and more, 312-981-7200. And that's the Team Hochberg phone line.
Dark clouds are blowing in the wind. He's crossing your mind again. You've got that sad feeling from a broken heart. Feeling so close to the end.
All right. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Ken Gerhard is my guest. He's an author and a cryptozoologist, and his latest book is The Essential Guide to Bigfoot. And we're talking about some of these mysterious creatures that are legendary and that Ken loves to write about and examine. Hello, Ken.
Hey.
All right. We have a guest. We have a caller here, Trucker Rich, our good friend Rich. Rich, go ahead.
Cool. Hey, good evening, Nick.
Yeah.
You know, you guys have talked about in the past that Jack and Ozzy's World Detour. Well, now they've got a series on called The Osbournes Want to Believe. And on the last episode, they were showing UFOs, you know, the pictures and stuff. The government's saying, yes, this is something that we don't know about. So they asked Ozzy about Bigfoot. And he said he believes Ozzy is an alien, and that he looks like that because it's a biomechanical suit so he can survive on Earth and be camouflaged.
That's Ozzy's theory. That's Ozzy's theory.
Yeah, that's Ozzy's theory.
Yeah,
it's just great to listen to him come up with these theories, and you know,
he's a very entertaining guy to watch, man.
Yeah, really, I mean, it's fun.
Yeah. Okay. So. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Rich.
All right. Yep. Have a good one.
All right. Take care. That's pretty funny, Ken.
Yeah, no doubt. I think a lot of people harbor kind of a secret fascination with some of these topics, and maybe for someone like Ozzy, who's a little more, you know, kind of out there, it's easier for him to kind of publicly acknowledge that he's interested in these things.
Yeah,
but.
So tell me about when you wrote your first book, and tell me about your very first one.
Well, my first book I wrote in 2007 is called Big Bird, Modern Sightings of Flying Monsters. And a lot of people are not familiar with this topic. You know, most people have heard of Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster and Chupacabra, so forth. But there are modern accounts. I've interviewed many people who claim that they've seen these giant winged creatures. Some describe them as birds, giant birds with wingspans ranging from 15 to 20 feet across.
Jeez.
So like a small airplane. Other people have said they look kind of prehistoric, and they have kind of this pterodactyl sort of look to them. But it's interesting because if you travel across North America, you'll find widespread Native American traditions that speak about things called thunderbirds. And other than being, you know, a kind of a sports car and a fine wine, the name Thunderbird also denotes these giant eagles or raptor-like birds that many Native American traditions talk about. So the modern sightings kind of line up very well with those Native traditions. There's no physical evidence. There are no good photographs. No one's found a giant feather or a nest or anything like that I'm aware of. But I got to tell you, once you've interviewed dozens of people, very seemingly credible people that have had these sightings, it becomes very convincing.
Are there areas that they're prone to? Are there certain places where they see more sightings than others?
Yeah, you'll like this. Most of the sightings or one of the hot spots is in Illinois.
Oh, really?
And yeah, particularly in central Illinois, back in 1977, there was a young boy named Marlon Lowe who allegedly was picked up by one of these thunderbirds and carried 30 feet, a couple of feet off the ground until he fought and kicked his way free, and this was witnessed by seven people, and it made the local newspapers and stuff, and wildlife officials there locally tried to explain it away as something like a turkey vulture, but there is no known bird that can pick up a 60-pound human and carry them for any distance. So that's a pretty remarkable. So there were a lot of sightings in central Illinois around that time. There seems to be a lot of activity in Pennsylvania for some reason, north central Pennsylvania. Here in Texas, where I live, we have a lot of sightings, particularly in the southern region near the Mexican border, and also up in the great state of Alaska, which I did a TV show up in Alaska a few years ago, and there were a lot of sightings up there as well.
In Alaska, wow.
Where you might expect to actually see them would be somewhere like Alaska, I would think. But
are the descriptions very similar? Are the creatures that people are seeing when you talk to a witness, is the description of the creature very similar to what another person would say?
Yeah, and again, there seem to be two archetypes. So the bird type is described as having like solid colored feathers, usually black or very dark, a hooked beak. Like an accipterid or a raptor type of bird. The other type, people say it doesn't have feathers. It has kind of a prehistoric look is how they describe it, with kind of leathery bat-like wings. And some people describe it as having a head crest and a reptilian tail. So, of course, that's more of a description of not a bird, but a flying reptile known as a pterosaur, which lived millions of years ago. So it's a real head scratcher as far as why there are these two distinct archetypes, and you know whether people are seeing one thing and maybe just interpreting it in different ways. But who knows? But yes, the descriptions are fairly consistent.
Are the sightings continuing? What was the most recent one?
The most recent one that I'm familiar with happened just a few years ago here in San Antonio, Texas, where I live. And in fact, I was contacted by two law enforcement officers that claimed they saw this thing while on duty. They had been called out to investigate a strange flying creature over a neighborhood. And, of course, they went off the record. They didn't want me to use their names or didn't give me permission to, but they wanted me to know that this thing was real, that they had seen it. So, yeah. You know, that was pretty remarkable.
And that was the most recent sighting. And that was your first book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what other books have you written?
I wrote a book called Encounters with Flying Humanoids, which covers another type of flying creature, which is the Mothman. And, you know, people have probably heard of that, but it's been reported mostly in West Virginia. But there are accounts of Mothman-type creatures all over the world, and those date back thousands of years. You can go back and look at different cultures like the ancient Assyrians and Sumerians, and they had creatures like Mothman that they depicted in their different carvings and things like that.
We had a hot spot. We were a hot spot for a while a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was like 2018. I think it was just a couple of years ago in that summer. The Mothman was all over the place in Chicago and in the area.
Yes, I was not the primary investigator on those cases, but some of the people that were investigating that were sending me the reports, and I think they're still ongoing. I think I've seen some recent ones there. So,
yeah. What's the legend of the Mothman?
Well, Mothman is one of the weirdest creatures in the annals of the unexplained. It's described as looking kind of human-like, standing about 6.5 feet tall, with bat-like wings, 10-foot wingspan, sturdy man-like legs, and people also say that it seems to be headless, or its head is kind of low-hung, and it has these two giant red glowing eyes. That's the most remarkable feature that people report, are these big red glowing eyes that seem to have a hypnotic effect on people who experience it. It's been reported mostly throughout, in and around a town called Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
Right.
Starting in 1966, and most of the sightings were in the late 60s, 66, 67. But again, they're ongoing, and I've investigated and interviewed eyewitnesses in Mexico, for example. There have been a number of Mothman-type sightings down in around Monterrey, Mexico, and northern Mexico in recent years.
And have you seen the movie The Mothman Prophecies with Richard Gere?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, and what did you think?
Not bad.
Yeah, no, I thought it was entertaining. I liked it.
The book has, you know, as is always the case, the book has just so many more layers. If anyone's interested in the movie or likes the movie, I would highly recommend the book by John Keel that it was based on, because he goes into a lot more detail and stuff that they didn't really get across in the movie. But the movie was good.
Yeah, I thought it was solid. It was very creepy. I thought it was really creepy. And that ending with the bridge is terrifying.
Well, that's the real tragedy behind the Mothman incident, is this: the Silver Bridge collapsed on December 15, 1967.
Right.
There in Point Pleasant, and 46 people drowned in the icy river. To this day, people in Point Pleasant still associate the Mothman with the bridge collapse. Some say his appearance was kind of a warning or a harbinger of this tragic event. And that's actually, that theory is borne out by different traditions around the world of creatures like the Mothman, again, dating back centuries, that these things are somehow warning us or omens of tragic events. But that's a very profound and a very tragic thing that's associated with the Mothman, no doubt.
All right, Ken, hold on, because we want to get to the essential guide for Bigfoot and other mysterious creatures. So hold on, Ken. Ken Gerhard is an author and studies all of these very mysterious creatures, including, as we mentioned, Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, the Chupacabra, the Mothman, and even werewolves. Yeah. And we will get back to that conversation here on 720 WGN right after the news. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Live here until 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, we head over to Bradley Place, the TV side of WGN, get some news and information from that great group, and then your morning drive starts at 5 with the great Bob Surratt. 312-981-7200, that's the phone number if you would like to join us. Ken Gerhardt is with us. He is an author and a cryptozoologist. His latest book is called The Essential Guide to Bigfoot. And if you love following these mysterious creatures and things like that, we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Hello, Ken.
Hey.
All right. Hey, before we get to Bigfoot, you actually try to find some evidence about werewolves. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So that one's a little bit far out, I guess, for people even that maybe believe in Bigfoot. But in 2008, I traveled to France, and there's a famous legend in France of a creature called the Beast of Gévaudan. Mm. And supposedly back in the 1760s, this creature, which was described as a giant wolf-like creature, they never positively identified what it was, went on a killing spree, three-year killing spree. And, I mean, this is well documented. It killed as many as 100 people in pretty grisly ways, decapitations and disemboweling and things like that. And it basically terrorized the southern France for 3 years. King Louis XV dispatched soldiers and wolf hunters, and it turned into quite an affair. But so in 2008, I did a special for the History Channel, and they sent me over there with a homicide detective. Reason being that some people think that maybe there was actually a serial killer involved in some way. So it's a pretty complex story, but there's no doubt that this creature did exist, that it attacked a number of people. It was ultimately killed with a silver bullet.
Wow.
And that is where we get the actual Hollywood borrows the silver bullet trope from.
That's where it comes from? That's where it comes from. Wow.
Yeah, the guy that shot this beast, his name was Jean Chastel, and he was a hunter, and he had a priest bless some silver bullets that he had made, and according to his story, this creature walked out in front of him one time in the woods, and he said a prayer and then shot this thing with the silver bullet, and the carcass was subsequently paraded around the countryside. They wanted to show all of the people that they had gotten the thing and that they were no longer in danger, and but by the time they got it to King Louis the 15th in Paris, it was rotting and decomposing, and it smelled really bad, so he immediately just told them to get rid of it. So there's a mystery as far as, you know, where the remains of this mysterious creature are, but it you know, the descriptions are basically were like a wolf, but much larger, longer tail, pointy ears, sharp teeth, and very clever animal. It was able to avoid being captured and killed for quite a long period of time.
Wow, that's fascinating. That's really cool. I love that we now have the origin story. I've often wondered where the silver bullet thing came from.
Yeah, absolutely. And as part of that television show, this was kind of cool. We actually did a ballistics test at the end of the show where we shot silver bullets to see how good they were in terms of. So I actually got to hold. I didn't get to shoot the gun, but I got to hold an actual silver bullet in my hand, which was pretty cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So is this available? Is that special available online or anywhere?
Yeah, it's called The Real Wolfman.
Okay.
And History Channel still shows it sometimes around Halloween as a rerun, but I believe it's on Amazon Prime and some of the other sites. I don't know if it's on YouTube, but folks can probably find it on a DVD
if
they're interested.
Great. I'd love to see it. I would love to watch that. That sounds great. Hey, you've traveled around the world looking for some of these creatures. What are some of the more memorable places that you've been to, and some of the places that you found some of these, you know, mysterious creatures?
Well, I mounted two expeditions in the nation of Belize down in Central America back in the early 2000s, specifically looking for a Bigfoot-type creature known as the Sisimito, and also a second type of smaller sort of pygmy-sized Bigfoot known as the Duende. And Duende is Spanish for goblin, and the local Maya people say that the Duende is kind of like a little short, hair-covered creature, like a Bigfoot, but only about 3 to 5 feet tall. And we were in an area called the Chickabole Jungle, They're in the Maya Mountains, which is a very remote area, and we did find some strange little footprints. They were sort of humanoid footprints with a pointy heel, which was kind of interesting, and that aligns very well with the legend of the Duende having pointy heels. So that was kind of a fun expedition. France, as I mentioned, I've done a lot of research in Mexico looking for the chupacabra, the sort of the vampire-like creature that's been reported down there, and also, as I said, some kind of Mothman-type creatures that are said to live in caves in the Sierra Madre Mountains. So those are some memorable ones for sure.
Yeah. You mentioned the chupacabra. This is sort of one of my favorites of those mysterious creatures. How far back does the chupacabra legend go?
1995 is when the world first heard the name chupacabra, and it came. You know, the first reports came out of Puerto Rico. Those were preceded by mysterious livestock killings, and you know, these local farmers that were raising chickens and goats and rabbits claimed that something was killing their livestock and drinking the blood, draining the blood out of these animals, which they had never seen before. Shortly thereafter, there were sightings of a strange creature, about 3 feet tall on two legs with spikes going down its back, kind of a reptilian look, large eyes. And so that was kind of when there was an interesting cultural thing going on back in the, of course, around that time in 95, the internet was just kind of getting going. And there were some websites that sprung up. Princeton University put a chupacabra website up. And so it was kind of like the shot heard around the world. People all over the world that were discovering the internet had kind of an interesting new creature that they could kind of talk about and stuff. But since that time, there have been sightings all over Latin America and the United States. The descriptions are different, and it's very confusing to some people. But what I try to tell them is that the name chupacabra, which is Spanish for goat sucker, actually describes a behavior pattern, a predation pattern, rather than a physical description. So in other words, the name chupacabra, I think, has been used gratuitously to describe different types of creatures that perhaps gotten lumped together.
Oh, okay. I see. Yeah, the chupacabra, I remember when I first heard about the chupacabra, it was like in the, I think it was around the late 90s when I first heard about the chupacabra, and I always found that one fascinating. You know, you mentioned, are there creatures all around the world? Are there legends that are all around the world? Because you mentioned France, they have this, and other places. Do you just hear from people around the world about their legends and their mysterious creatures?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Wherever you travel in the world, and as I said, I've been very blessed. I've traveled to 26 different countries on 6 continents, and wherever I go, I hear about different types of mysterious creatures, whether they're you know, hominid, Bigfoot-type creatures, man-like and hairy, is one popular archetype. Lake monsters and sea serpents, things like the Loch Ness Monster, can be found in all over the world. And, you know, the winged cryptids that I talked about, like thunderbirds. There's actually the field of cryptozoology is fairly vast in terms of different types of mysterious animals that have been reported all over the world.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Ken, hang on. Ken Gerhardt is with us. His website is kengerhardt.com. He's an author and a zoologist, a cryptozoologist. And we're going to jump into Bigfoot. We got to talk about Daryl. So the latest book is called The Essential Guide to Bigfoot. And we'll talk about that on 720 WGN. Hey, if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here till 4 o'clock as we are every weeknight into the week morning. And that would be 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we head over to Bradley Place TV side of WGN, get some early morning news from that great group, and then the great Bob Surratt at 5 for your morning drive. We always play back some classic Johnny Carson. You can watch the Johnny Carson Show on Antenna TV every night. And at 2:30 a.m., we always play back some great Johnny Carson clips, either some stand-up or a sketch. Now we're going to play back Johnny Steals Letterman's Truck. I'm intrigued. Speaking of intrigued, my guest is Ken Gerhard. He's an author and a cryptozoologist, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And let's say hello again to Ken. Hello, Ken.
Hey.
All right. Tell us about the Essential Guide to Bigfoot.
Well, I've been investigating Bigfoot for decades. Never really occurred to me to write a book, believe it or not, until recently. There are actually, if you're into Bigfoot, there are some several good books that are available that had a lot of good information, but most of those are older now. And what I really found discouraging in recent years is that, as wonderful as the internet is in terms of gathering information, a lot of the information with regard to Bigfoot is actually misinformation. There are a lot of falsehoods, a lot of hoaxes, and so forth. So I basically just wanted to put together a primer for people that are interested in the subject. It compiles a lot of the best information, and not just information I've gathered, but it's kind of a consensus opinion based on the foundation of Bigfoot research that goes back decades. There have been people investigating Bigfoot actively since the 1950s and before, and I've been very blessed to have worked with a lot of the leading Bigfoot investigators in the world. I've searched for evidence all over the North American continent, from Alaska to Florida to, you name it. I've interviewed hundreds of witnesses, and I felt it was an important subject that required a great deal of accuracy. And so, I tried to sort of push back and dispel a lot of the misunderstandings and misinformation out there. So, it's the best evidence, some of the best sightings. I think most importantly, for people that are willing to accept that Bigfoot might be a reality, which I'm about 90% convinced that these things exist. I've never seen one with my own eyes, but looking at the evidence for decades, I'm 90% convinced they exist. And if they exist, then there are certain zoological questions that have to be answered in terms of how many of these things can there be, where do they live, what do they eat, so on and so forth. So, hopefully I addressed a lot of those questions in an intelligent way.
Bigfoot's got to be the granddaddy, right? Of mysterious creatures, has got to be, right?
Bigfoot's the rock star of cryptozoology. There's no doubt.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And when did the sightings first begin? It goes back many, many, many years, correct?
Well, you have Native American traditions, like we were talking about earlier with the Thunderbird, all over. For example, when I was up in Alaska, there were probably a dozen different names that refer to Bigfoot-type creatures. Sasquatch is kind of an anglicized version of a Canadian Salish name that people knew about for centuries. But modern sightings, began to be documented. Well, something remarkable happened in the 1950s in Northern California, which was these giant human-like footprints were being found on logging roads. And one person had the wherewithal to make a plaster cast of one of these footprints and take it to a newspaper. That was the shot heard around the world. They put a picture of this guy holding this cast of this giant human-like footprint that was 16 inches long, and the editor of that particular newspaper coined the name Bigfoot, which I wished. I'm sure he wished he had trademarked it now, because
yeah.
But that's kind of where we first heard about Bigfoot. The name Sasquatch goes back to the 1920s in Canada, so that's what they were called before then. The research has been going on for decades, and there's really a lot of evidence that people are not aware of.
And how did you discover some of this when you were putting the book together? You talked with witnesses, you talked with people, you traveled around, correct, to get all this information?
Well, it's kind of a compilation of my decades of personal research, and I also interviewed about 20 of the top Bigfoot investigators in the field extensively to kind of get their thoughts and opinions and try to build what we refer to in cryptozoology as an identikit. This is the reality. If Bigfoot exists, this is the reality of what Bigfoot is.
Oh, identikit?
Yeah, Identikit. So, you know, it's physical description. You know, one of the really compelling aspects to the Bigfoot mystery is that the eyewitness descriptions are very, very consistent. You know, if you go around the country, most people describe these things as looking very similar, similar size, physical features, behaviors, and so on and so forth.
And have there been sightings all over the place?
Yeah, pretty much. There are heavier concentrations in the Pacific Northwest, California, Oregon, Washington State. But we do have sightings all over North America. It seems like pretty much wherever you have an abundance of wilderness area. And there are some hot spots in the eastern United States as well, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, the southeastern United States, you know, East Texas, Arkansas, but New York State, Upper New York State. So yeah, there do seem to be sightings all over.
Wow. Yeah. And you know, you can't really, I mean, these people who are talking about these sightings, they're, you know, reliable. They're right. They're credible.
Many of the people I've interviewed that have had sightings are extremely credible, and particularly because many of them are sort of lifelong outdoorsmen. You know, that a lot of the people that experience Bigfoot are people that are out hunting or camping or, you know, people that own ranches that are familiar with different types of animals. So I think that adds another layer of credibility because these people can distinguish, you know, what a bear looks like, for example, versus a Bigfoot and so on and so forth.
Right.
So, yeah, when you look into people's eyes over and over and over again, it becomes very convincing.
Yeah. How do you deal with skeptics?
You know, I'm a little skeptical myself sometimes, and I think skepticism is important. You know, the proposition that there is a giant hair-covered human-like species, a hominid, running around in North America is pretty unbelievable. In fact, based on two recent polls, only about 18 to 20% of the general population thinks Bigfoot could actually exist. So, you know, like one in five people. So most people, I understand, everyone loves Bigfoot, you know, but only about 20% of us think that it could actually be real.
Yeah.
You know, I've dealt with skeptics my whole life. I like the skeptical point of view because I think it's important to, you know, think critically and to be objective and not get sort of emotionally attached to the possibility that these things exist because, you know, we'd all love for them to be real, but... So, yeah, but, you know, I think the bigger problem are the hoaxers. You know, you have a lot of people out there these days making hoaxed videos for YouTube and leaving footprints out and things like that. And I think that kind of creates kind of a dubious air, you know, that hangs over the field.
Yeah, that's too bad. That is too bad. You know, Bigfoot is as popular as ever, obviously. I know that you've probably seen the Geico commercial.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just he's been a part of the pop culture, the culture in general, for as far back as I can remember.
Bigfoot is a pop icon.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of, I think, sociological and psychological reasons for that. And, you know, as I write in the book, Bigfoot is essentially a reflection of our wilder selves, right?
Sure,
when we
sure.
look at Bigfoot, it kind of connects us in a way to the wilderness and, you know, it's supposedly so human-like that I think people are attracted to that particular aspect of it.
Yeah. Would you call Bigfoot an American icon?
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
Now, what about it? Why do you think people are a little bit hesitant or shy about their belief in, like, paranormal or the strange?
Well, you know, in my circle, I don't find that's the case because obviously I run in that group.
Right,
so.
Right.
I think people are generally, I'd say over the years, people have generally become more open-minded to the possibility that some of these things exist, Bigfoot, UFOs, ghosts, you know, it essentially it all boils down to what kind of person you are. And I think more people are willing to accept that there are things in our world, in our universe that we simply don't understand and we haven't discovered yet. And, I think it's important, you know, as a species that we maintain that belief system, that, you know, that sense of mystery and discovery and exploration.
Yeah. It's fascinating to talk to you. Cryptozoologist and author Ken Gerhard, and the latest book is called The Essential Guide to Bigfoot. And what are your other books? Just throw out the titles here real quick, some of the other ones.
Big Bird, Modern Sightings of Flying Monsters, Encounters with Flying Humanoids, and A Menagerie of Mysterious Beasts.
A Menagerie of Mysterious Beasts. I like that title.
That covers the whole gamut of everything I've investigated through the years.
Yeah. And you continue your investigations, correct?
Sadly, not so much this year for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But it's an ongoing process.
All right. Well, fascinating stuff. It was so much fun talking to you. The latest book is called The Essential Guide to Bigfoot, and your website is kengerhard.com, and that's G-E-R-H-A-R-D, author and cryptozoologist. And you can look up some stuff online right there. Ken, real pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for having me on, Nick,
okay. And
hope everyone out there is staying safe and feeling well.
Thank you very much, Ken. There you go. Ken Gerhard, author. His latest book is The Essential Guide to Bigfoot, and he basically studies and looks for evidence of these mysterious creatures that we've all heard about for many, many, many years. You got your Loch Ness Monster, you got your Chupacabra, you got your Mothman, and he even studied werewolves, but his latest book is all about Bigfoot.